Today on the 21st, we're talking about the American dream.
What dreams do you chase?
To work a job that's going to make a difference in somebody else's life.
For many, higher education means social mobility.
People can come from anywhere, and if you're willing to work hard enough, you can have it all.
What does the American dream mean in Illinois?
It takes generations to build a world-class university, but only a few short years to destroy it, and the clock is ticking.
That's University of Illinois President Timothy Clean. New census data shows that more people are fleeing our state than any other. Today, we're going to be talking about how the current budget crisis relates to that dream, to university recruitment, and how state workers are feeling. What about you? Do you want to stay in Illinois? Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455 or tweet to 21st Show. That's this hour on the program. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We have a theme to today's show, and that's the American dream. It's one of my favorite narratives. It's really part of the fabric of how we see ourselves and our country. Census data out this week shows that many have given up on that dream here in Illinois. More people have fled Illinois than any other state in the country. One Gallup poll says that more than half of residents say they would leave if they could. That is higher than any other state in the country also. We've been talking to you all about this on Reddit this past week. This is not scientific. It is crowdsourced. But of the 80 people who responded on four subreddits across the state of Illinois, overwhelmingly people said they were planning to leave, they wanted to leave, or they'd already left. Why? Well, the weather is always a factor, but mostly we heard about worries about higher taxes because of the current budget crisis and pension situation and corruption. On the topic of corruption, there's also news this morning about former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. The Supreme Court this morning refused to hear Blagojevich's appeal of his corruption conviction. In case you forgot, he's serving a 14-year sentence for, among other things, trying to sell the then empty Senate seat once held by President Barack Obama. So, back to our topic this hour. Do you want to leave Illinois? If not, why do you stay? Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. Again, that's 1-800-222-9455. Or you can always tweet us. Our handle is 21st Show. To help us delve into the numbers, I want to welcome to the 21st Aaron Wren. He's a senior fellow from the Manhattan Institute, a Midwesterner now living in New York City. Aaron, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks for having me on.
Aaron, I know there's lots of different demographic patterns here, and they differ in part for the city of Chicago versus the rest of the state. And I want to get into those nuances later, but let's just start with these big numbers. And when we say Illinois is losing more people more than any other state, what does that mean?
Well, in terms of absolute declines.
Right.
Yeah, so that just means this population declined by a greater number than any other state. That's a little misleading in some cases because Illinois is a huge state, one of the biggest in the country. So it's very easy to get large numbers. That's a smaller rate. But people have left the state of Illinois at rates higher than other places, too. Its domestic out-migration rate, which is basically everything except international immigrants, on a net basis, it was the second lowest state in the country last year. So that contributes to the decline. So even on a rate, it's not doing that great.
Mm-hmm. And what about when you count international migration? Still not great.
Well, Chicago especially, but Illinois, it continues to attract immigrants. That number has held pretty steady in recent years. But the domestic out-migration has ramped up. Now, in part, that's because of the rebound in the economy nationally. During the Great Recession, mobility in the United States, migration went down a lot and has now rebounded strongly. So I wouldn't read too much into the numbers as about the specific conditions of Illinois right now, because we've seen this rise in migration elsewhere. But certainly a rise in people kind of leaving domestically has overshadowed the number of people moving in internationally. And then a fairly low rate of people who are more births than deaths.
Right. So the natural population flow is also not great. And that's my question to you then. How much of this is part of the normal churn of a state? Obviously, Illinois has a large population base. How much of this is something that is different in the past few years in Illinois?
One piece of context is that Illinois is very similar to most other Midwest states. The demographics of most of them are not that good. I grew up in Indiana. Most of Indiana is not that dissimilar from downstate Illinois. In fact, Indiana has out-migration. Its population growth has been pretty anemic. There's a lot of economic stress. The area where I grew up is where national headlines were being made about an HIV epidemic from all the heroin that's going on. So the things that are happening in Illinois, frankly, are not all that different from what's going on in the rest of the country. I do believe there's a little bit of a topper, if you will, in Illinois that, you know, the financial situation of the state, which is very poor, as well as the corruption, some of these things are a bit of a drag. There's also the challenge that, you know, unlike Indiana, which has a little more uniform type of economy, Illinois has this very diverse state in terms of it's got this elite downtown Chicago, and it's got the more workaday downstate, and it's very hard to create policies that are suitable for both places. And so there's a lot of tensions in Illinois that make its problems more difficult. And what we see is that fundamentally the problem seems to be fewer people coming in. Mm-hmm. I looked at some IRS data, and actually people leave Indiana at a higher rate than they leave Illinois. It's just that Indiana has more people moving in than Illinois does.
So right now, more people are moving to Indiana than are moving to Illinois?
At a rate. No, maybe not more physical people.
But the rate is higher.
The rate is higher, yes.
Wow, okay.
So slightly higher. I mean, they're in the top 10. I mean, the bottom 10 on both in and out migration. Very stagnant populations.
Let me ask you something, because when we talk to people, when you poll people about this and you ask them about sentiment, of course, it's not surprising that people complain about the weather, people complain about taxes. This is an issue you study. This is, by the way, we're speaking to Aaron Wren. He's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He lives in New York, but Aaron, you've lived all over. You've lived in Chicago. You've lived in big cities and small cities throughout the Midwest, too. Is an issue that you study, why do people move? Do people move because of jobs? Do people move because of crime? Do people move because of safety? What do you see in the data?
I haven't actually dug too much into that data. Mostly what I've seen, though, and basically on my own experience, is people move for opportunities because they think they can better their lives. And some people move for retirement, you know, retirement. I wouldn't want to speak too detailed to it because the Census mm-hmm. Bureau publishes some data on that, but I'm not familiar with it.
Well, one thing you have looked at, though, is there are people, I think there's also interesting data about people who moves in terms of who has the means to move versus who doesn't. What does that look like?
Right. Well certainly today, if you think about historically, the stories of migration, like the grapes of wrath, it was people who were at the margins of society who migrated because they were basically forced to. Or we can think of the poor of Sicily, you know, my maternal ancestors coming here because they were dirt poor. Today in the United States domestically, it's much more likely to be highly educated, higher income people that are more mobile than lower income people. So in many respects, people at a high school or a lower educational attainment rate have many more barriers to moving.
Such as, do you think it's all just simply resources and money?
Well, some of it's probably personal preference to some extent. Some people are more rooted than others. Others are more mobile. But it takes, say you're stuck in an economically struggling community. You're not highly educated. You don't have a lot of savings. How are you going to prospect jobs in other cities? How are you going to go for job interviews? How are you going to go down there and find an apartment? How are you going to put down a damage deposit and first month's rent on an apartment? You know, it's costly to move long distance, especially if you don't have networks of people. You know, I have a network of people that I went to school with who are now scattered all over. So I have a lot of knowledge and kind of connections in a lot of cities. But if I hadn't gone to college and I just lived in southern Indiana my whole life, my network would be almost exclusively people in southern Indiana. So I wouldn't have as good of visibility or as good of connections to be able to think about moving. And so there are some barriers that make lower income and lesser educated people less mobile today. We also have, unlike in that Grapes of Wrath era, many more social support programs that effectively subsidize people in place and, in fact, make it risky to move. You might lose some of your benefits and have to requalify in another state, for example. So some of our, social service policies, kind of constrain mobility as well.
Let me ask you, Aaron, one of the things we see in the data from Cook County specifically is the number of young people and young families who are leaving. Do you think that raises additional concerns for the region and state when you see so many young adults leaving? I think when you're contrasting that certainly with an area like Urbana-Champaign, because of the university, you'd naturally see a lot of churn of young people moving in and moving out. But what about for Cook County in the Chicago area?
Well, Chicago both takes people in and exports them. That sort of human capital churn is not necessarily unhealthy. You think about a place like New York. A lot of young people move to New York. They want to experience the big city life. But then when you get older, especially if you get married, you have children, the urban life doesn't necessarily make as much sense. I like to think a little bit of some of these big cities, and Chicago falls into that to some extent as well, as human capital refineries. Much like you go to school, you're there 4 years, and you leave with this degree. If you move to a Chicago or a New York, and you work in these high-end occupations, that gives you a set of skills, a set of experiences, a set of connections that you could then take and apply in a different market. If you desire. So it's the natural process of the life cycle is that people may, in fact, move. So churn is not necessarily a bad thing.
Churn isn't a bad thing, but when you see the numbers right now for Illinois, do you attribute that to just churn, or is this something you're a little bit more worried about looking at the census data from 2014 on?
Well, in general, Illinois has pretty low churn. In fact, it's a negative out-migration. At the end of the day, it's losing people to other states on a net basis, but there are not that many people leaving, and there are not that many people moving in. And so what you see is a lot of these places are heavily populated by people who've are living in the state where they were born. Mm-hmm. That's one of the metrics that's often used from the Census Bureau. And you can see that these Rust Belt areas have a lot of that, where they're very dominated by long-time residents. And that does, in its very nature, have an inhibitory effect on people wanting to move in. It's like, I moved into my community.
Well, and I was going to, as I say that, I wanted to bring someone else into the conversation because you grew up in southern Indiana, and we wanted to check in with some of our neighbors with the hopes they could give us a perspective on what it looks like from the outside. So joining us now is the man in charge of economic development for the state of Indiana, the Secretary of Commerce, Victor Smith. Secretary Smith, thanks for taking the time to join us on the 21st.
Hey, Natalie, thanks for inviting me.
What does all of this look like? I feel like I should just ask you, what does Illinois look like from the outside right now from Indiana?
Well, one, it looks like a great opportunity.
For Indiana, not for Illinois. That's what you mean.
but seriously, I've always said that Indiana, the whole Midwest, would be stronger and would be better financially and from a business standpoint if all of the states within the Midwest were hitting on all cylinders. And right now, there's obviously some question on some policies and some things going on in Illinois. We hope that things get on track and that engine continues to churn, because we're in better shape if Illinois is doing better, too. That's for sure.
Secretary Smith, for all the talk about people may have about how frustrated they are to actually relocate, especially if your business, is a big deal. So I wanted to ask you what you hear from businesses about why they typically would want to leave a state.
You know, candidly, it's very much policy driven. When you just look at the tax differential, when they begin looking at comparing versus what the situation they're facing is today, rising property taxes, school funding that gets into question. So now you have both parents now kind of scratching their heads saying, what's the wrong or what's the right long-term decision here, and not seeing a positive end in sight. You begin to look at options, and then as you begin to compare, in Indiana here, we compare very favorably, candidly, with when you look at property tax, when you look at personal income tax, when you look at corporate tax, when you look at workers' compensation rates, which are very bottom line oriented to companies. Indiana's number two versus Illinois, which is like number 48, lower being better. So when you begin to take all these considerations into factor, you begin to have people say, well, look, with no positive end in sight, maybe it's time.
And is that your pitch to them? Yeah, is that your pitch? Is that what you say?
The pitch are just simply the facts. No, we have a great story here to tell in Indiana, and we just like to tell the facts, and people are going to come to their own conclusions. But you know, businesses tend to be financially driven entities, and armed with the facts, they're going to make the right financial decision. And unfortunately, for some to our West, it really is, it's a better financial future. And it's candidly the word we use, it's a more predictable future here in Indiana.
That's Victor Smith, Indiana's State Secretary of Commerce. Secretary Smith, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you very much.
Aaron, last question for you. We've just got about 30 seconds here, but do you think that Illinois is in significant trouble or no, in terms of when you look at the numbers, when you hear the perspective from other states? Or should we just be seeing Illinois like every other Midwestern state?
I think there's a lot of similarities to other Midwestern states. So having said that, Illinois has a lot of unique dysfunctions in its financial situation, a lot of the regulatory aspects around, especially public employee unions, and the corruption. So those are things that are lesser the case in other places and need to be corrected for Illinois to even think about getting better.
That's Aaron Wren. He's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Aaron, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
For a visual county breakdown of population feed, check out our Twitter handle. We've got a lot of stuff that some graphics we're tweeting out to if you follow 21st Show. Coming up, how state workers are faring. We'll be talking about that. Stay tuned.
Support for the 21st comes from the library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, helping to generate new knowledge and developing and evaluating new technologies and methodologies that better distribute scholarly knowledge. This is your university library.
This is the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo.
It takes generations to build a world-class university, but only a few short years to destroy it, and the clock is ticking. The uncertainty alone threatens harm as our peer universities reach out to top faculty and leading researchers with offers that we currently can't match. And we know that there's a 70% increase in resignations on our primary flagship campus for over last year.
That's University of Illinois President Timothy Killeen in his testimony to the Illinois State Senate a few weeks ago. On this hour on the 21st, we're talking about the American dream in Illinois. Is it gone? Many of the people who are leaving probably think so, but what about for the workers who are here? And what about that 70% increase in resignations at the University of Illinois specifically? Joining us now, the Vice Provost for Faculty Affairs and Academic Policies for the University of Illinois. In studio with me, Vice Provost Abbas Ben-Mamoun. Vice Provost, thanks for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
I know that there are other reasons for why people don't stay when you're talking about what President Killeen said about the 70% increase in resignations, but let's get straight to it and ask how much of the state budget situation is directly affecting retention at the University of Illinois?
Well, certainly, as you said, there are various reasons why people decide to take a job somewhere else. Could be family reasons, could be better salaries somewhere else, could be they want to be in a big city, but certainly, the budget impasse that we are facing could be a factor. People sometimes do not volunteer while they have decided to take a job somewhere else, but that's certainly a factor. You hear it from people sometimes tell you, I am really not sure about the state's commitment to higher education, whether this is a state where they can invest their career in. So that's a factor. The other factor, of course, is the pension situation as well. So there's a diversity of factors that lead people to take jobs somewhere else.
And Vice Provost, I wanted to delve a little bit deeper into that 70% increase in resignations number, because let's talk about how much that specifically represents. That figure that the president cited is a difference between data that you all have from January last year until January this year?
That's correct. So retention efforts, we call this retention efforts, trying to retain faculty. It's a year-long effort. So we track it bi-monthly basis. So we compared the figures from January 2015 and January 2016. So, for example, in January 2015, we had about 12 faculty resign, accepted to take positions somewhere else. But this year, we are over 20 faculty. So it is a marked increase.
More than 20 faculty. That's a marked increase. 20 faculty out of, remind us how many faculty that we have here?
Over 1,900 faculty.
Okay, so 22 out of 1,900.
That's correct.
That said, how much of that increase is alarming to you? Your job is retention and recruitment here at the university,
right,
faculty.
Because when you compare to historical trends, that's quite a large increase. Usually we are around that figure of 12, 13 at this time, at the time of the year, January. By the end of the year, we have about, let's say, between 45 and 50 faculty who decide to leave.
But I'm so we're already double at what we were at.
Exactly. And okay, we don't know where we are going to end up. The provost and the chancellor are working extremely hard, try to retain the faculty. We are, putting competitive packages on the table for our faculty because they are being aggressively recruited by other institutions. So we are doing our best to retain them. I should also mention, to reassure our listeners, that in fact we are also continue to hire excellent faculty to make sure that we replenish the faculty ranks.
Before I ask you what you say to them to recruit them to come here, I wanted to ask if you're hearing similar things from your counterparts at other university campuses throughout the state.
Yes, for example, Wisconsin is dealing with the same problem.
Oh, other states as well.
Other states. Are you talking about?
I was talking about other Illinois. Yeah, I was thinking in particular, yeah, UIC, or if you're hearing from Western Illinois University, or certainly we've heard about the layoffs at Eastern.
Right.
Are you hearing that? Is this a similar story? Would you imagine?
I haven't heard that firsthand, but I know that there is a lot of anxiety out there. And I wouldn't be surprised if faculty there are also looking for other opportunities.
And to your point about Wisconsin, do you find that this is maybe reflective of a tension that's happening at many public universities throughout the country, maybe particularly in the Midwest, where we've seen different levels of, I guess, different philosophies about how public education should be funded?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, you are seeing this in some places where, public commitment to higher education may be under being questioned. Illinois actually has had always a good commitment to higher education. But the uncertainty about the budget and the budget impasse is not helping us, obviously.
And what do you say then to people that you're recruiting? As you mentioned, the university is hiring. There are positions the University of Illinois is trying to fill. What do you say to someone who's only seeing headlines about Illinois that say we're the only state that doesn't have a budget and now we're 10 months into a situation where there isn't a budget?
Well, what we are telling them is that we can deal with this. At some point, we are going to have a state budget. The state is going to come through. Hopefully that will be soon. And the president and the chancellor are working with the states on providing some certainty over the long term. We also, they know that this is a world-class institution. We have great facilities, great students, great faculty. We are trying also to diversify our sources of funds so that we don't rely exclusively on state funding. We are not doing that at the moment. So we try to reassure people that, in fact, the long term looks good. We have a new College of Medicine that is going to start here within 2 or 3 years. We have a new design center for students, actually, to learn to do interdisciplinary research on design and work on projects together, because that's the trend in education. So this is still an exciting place to come and develop your career.
That's Vice Provost for Faculty Affairs and Academic Policies at the University of Illinois, Abbos Ben-Mamoun. Vice Provost, if you can stay with us for a few minutes, I wanted to bring someone else into this conversation. By the way, those of you listening are always welcome to join us as well. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. You know, when we are asking people all this hour, we've been talking about whether or not you stay in Illinois, why you would stay, why you leave. One resident posted in the Champaign-Urbana Reddit, he said he was leaving specifically because of the pension crisis. And here's the comment. For decades, politicians have allowed unions to strong arm the state into an outrageous pension system that will force younger taxpayers to pay significant sums of money just to maintain pension payments. I think younger workers and college students post-graduation should especially abandon the state and let those who chose this terrible system suffer austerity measures that will have to be put in place to try to continue paying ridiculous pension payments our state has. That's one person's opinion about the current pension situation we're facing right now with Illinois. Speaking of unions and labor, on Friday, there's a day of action that's planned for Chicago with the Chicago's teacher union. It started with that. Now it's spreading throughout the state. Members of the CTU are planning a walk-off strike on Friday, but they won't be alone. There's other protests being planned by groups, including the Fight for $15 and several university locals, Western Illinois, Eastern Illinois, Chicago State, others, and SEIU Healthcare Illinois. James Muhammad is the communication director at SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Missouri, and Indiana, and he joins us now. James, welcome to the 21st.
Hey, thanks, Naila, for inviting us.
So this started just as CTU. Why is SEIU getting involved with this action, this day of action on April 1st?
Well, it started with CTU, but actually the things that are happening in Chicago and throughout the state is impacting everybody. We saw this as a prime opportunity to show how united working people throughout the state are, and that we're standing up to the policies of Governor Rauner, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and other legislators who don't value working people in the state of Illinois.
And wanted to ask you about the narrative of this, right? Because whenever there's a CTU protest, I think people often see it as the CTU president, Karen Lewis, maybe, versus Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. But now, with all these other groups involved, and as you said, a statewide message, what do you want the focus of Friday's events to be?
Well, as you know, there's a broad coalition of organizations joining the protests throughout the state. Each organization has their specific interests, but in general, the overall message is we don't necessarily have a budget problem. We have a revenue problem, and we have a problem of the will of Governor Rauner to come to the table as it pertains to the state budget to negotiate a budget with Democrats and other Republicans at the table.
So, James, you all are directing this specifically more at Governor Rauner?
Yes.
Okay. And what is SEIU Healthcare Illinois' specific message that you would like to send to Governor Rauner?
We're saying Governor Rauner, when he came into office, he literally said that he may have to force a shutdown in the state of Illinois. We feel that's the wrong approach. We feel that Governor Rauner needs to sit at the table with others and negotiate a budget that will be sufficient to fund the vital services that people in Illinois depend on, specifically our seniors, our elders, and children who depend on child care so that parents can work. With parents not being able to work, it's having a devastating impact on the tax base, and it's having a devastating impact on families. Where, with regard to seniors are filled with anxiety because they don't know what's going to happen next. And as you get up in age, you know, you want to depend on having a state of mind where you're at peace, and that will help to preserve your state of being and your health. By threatening healthcare workers to lose their jobs, to lose their healthcare, and other things, it's creating a lot of anxiety amongst our seniors and amongst the workforce.
James, what specific events are planned for Friday throughout the state? I know that in Chicago, the Chicago Teachers Union has organized a walk-off. Are you encouraging other members to have, whether you use the word strike or walk-off or whatever, is that what you're encouraging your workers to do?
Yeah, we absolutely will be joining in the actions throughout the state, beginning very early in the morning, where we'll have child care workers, nursing home workers, home care workers joining the picket lines at various locations in the city specifically. We'll also be having demonstrations outside the Department of Human Services in Chicago. There are going to be big rallies. There will be a big rally, pardon me, at 4 o'clock at the Thompson Center, where Governor Rauner's office is. But also, you know, Mayor Rahm Emanuel is also one of the targets in a lot of the organizations as well, including SEIU.
James, let me ask you one last question, which is that comment that I read from that Redditor earlier who said part of the reason why this person wanted to leave Illinois was just because they feel like the pension situation is an outrageous system and they're worried about being stuck with the bill and they blame labor for that. How do you respond to people who think that unions have to give up some of their benefits for the state to get back on track?
Well, I would say several things. Number one, the pension issue is not necessarily part of our health care, SEIU health care issue. But I will say this is a problem that has been building for a long time. And if you look back in the history of all of this, this is not a problem that just popped up. And various legislators in the past have been kicking the can down the road. That's on the pension side. But I will say that labor, organized labor, has provided many of the advantages that have allowed allowed working people to enter into the middle class. Right now, you see the pendulum swinging. It's swinging more toward the rich and the wealthy, where most of the wealth is held in the hands of a top 5 to 1% of the workforce, of the population. We are saying that organized labor is a balance to that, and that the 40-hour work week, the lunch break, and the quality of jobs that are produced is a benefit and a direct result of people organizing to have their voices heard at the table where work is concerned.
And that's James Muhammad. He's Communications Director for SEIU Healthcare Illinois. As he's saying, people are organizing for Friday, not just Chicago Teachers Union, but a group of university locals, Western, Eastern, Chicago State, organizers for the Fight for $15, and of course, SEIU Healthcare Illinois planning events and in Chicago on Friday. James, thanks for being with us.
All right. Thank you, Naila.
Vice Provost, I just wanted to come back to you as you're listening to all of this. And again, this is we're just talking about sort of recruiting for the University of Illinois. And as we're thinking about all of this, I can't help but wonder about how you think if the University of Illinois' finances and the situation is going to look a little bit different a year from now, as we're 10 months into this budget situation.
Well, I mean, we are hoping that the state at some point will come through with its funding for higher education. The chancellor and the president are working with them and asking them to provide some flexibility, some stability, and some certainty about the budget. You know, it is a very tough situation for us because we consider ourselves as an asset for the state. We are the competitive edge for the state. We provide the talent. We recruit students and faculty who can provide, you know, new ideas, new opportunities for businesses and others. So we are hoping that the state is going to come through at some point. And
from a recruiting standpoint, do you think the more difficult thing is the instability of the situation? Is it just that this has gone on much longer than we thought it was going to? No one really foresaw that we would basically be a year. We're in 10 months now without.
Yeah, you are. That's right. I mean, it's the uncertainty and the instability and the worry that this might become a trend. We try to reassure people that, you know, the president and the chancellor are working with the state on a long-term compact that will provide some certainty and stability for the university. But that's a worry out there.
And had you heard about the events this Friday that were being planned?
No.
Now you have. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's the Vice Provost for Faculty Affairs and Academic Policies at the University of Illinois, Abbas Ben-Mamoun. Thank you for being with us,
Vice
Provost.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Coming up on the 21st, our hour on the American Dream continues. We'll be hearing about a new nationwide project that looks at all different versions of the American Dream. It's a web series, really, and there's lots of different videos. The 21st is one of the partners. So that's coming up later on in the hour. You can always follow us. If you find us on Facebook, you can search for the 21st show. You can also find all the great graphics we've been tweeting out, looking at the demographic information of the state that we're facing. Follow 21st show on Twitter.
Support for the 21st comes from the library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, hosting the annual Edible Book Festival on April 4th at 11:30 at the University YMCA. Participants create dishes inspired by fiction or nonfiction literary works or characters. This is your university library.
This is the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. All this hour, we've been talking about what the American dream means. We've been talking specifically about what that means here in Illinois in terms of whether or not people stay here, but we want to broaden the conversation American dream and how it's changed. That's because there's a project that's all about promoting dialogue about the American dream. It's called ReDream.
The American dream. White picket fences, 2.78 kids and a dog. It's a dream we once shared. What is success to you? What dreams do you chase?
To work a job that's going to make a difference in somebody else's life.
For many, higher education means social mobility.
People can come from anywhere, and if you're willing to work hard enough, you can have it all.
But there are still people that are left behind for a lot of different reasons. There's room, a lot of room for improvement across the board.
The 21st is partnering with ReDream. It's a nationwide series that's led by Kansas City Public Television, KCPT. So for the next few weeks, you're going to be hearing about this project on our airwaves, if you haven't noticed it online already. I'm joined now by Nathaniel Bosarth. He's the executive producer for ReDream, and Carla McCabe, the executive producer for ReDream. She's also vice president for digital and multimedia content at KCPT. Nathaniel, Carla, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Nathaniel, let's start with you. What's the ReDream project all about?
Well, ReDream is about, just like you said, starting a conversation about what does opportunity look like today in the 21st century? What does the American dream look like in the 21st century? We realize that there have been shifts in the economy. A lot has changed since the idyllic white picket fences, the 2.5 kids and a dog in the suburbs. That ideology was first started, and we kind of trace that back to the 50s and 60s with the rise of suburbia, and a lot of change. So we're kind of out to just see, so are people still dreaming? How has that dream changed? Is that a real dream for anyone? And how are people achieving that dream?
I'm curious, Nathaniel, I wanted to ask you, and Carla, I want to ask you this also. It is this notion of the American dream. It is such a pervasive one. Is it something that you, Nathaniel, did you say that you think this really arose in the 50s, or do you think this was so much part of our narrative before that?
I definitely think it's a part of our narrative before that. I think that particular imagery of the white picket fence
is a 50s one, right?
Yes. I definitely think, I mean, there's some great literature out there that kind of traces it back to, the Puritans who came over from Europe. There's great literature out there that kind of puts it in our national dialogue from the start.
Carla, why did KCPT want to get involved with this project?
It was a huge opportunity for us to really engage with the local community and talk to people, you know, firsthand. We were very lucky in that we produced another series prior with Nathaniel and his and Christopher Cook, who heads up another organization here. So we first of all did a series called Your Fellow Americans, which was about race, immigration, and the American dream. And with that series, they were short videos, but again, the big part for that was dialogue. So we went out into the community and hosted town hall events and just really had some conversations. Some schools have picked it up and put it on their curriculum. And again, we learned a lot from that series, and from that since then, the evolution of ReDream has been pretty amazing. We're very lucky that we have 14 other stations, including ourselves, involved. So we're getting a really good reach of people and a really diverse perspective.
And Nathaniel, as Carla said, 14 member stations. The goal is to bolster dialogue. How many different videos and what else is on the ReDream website?
So we have a fantastic website. Thanks for asking that. So there's 40 videos. And right now, let's see, as of today, the 21st video came out today.
Oh, that's perfect for our 21st show. You guys planned that, right?
Fantastic. I didn't realize that. Yeah, so there's a new video releases every day. It goes live on our website at ReDreamProject.org. Each of those videos is following an individual as they pursue happiness, their version of the American dream, and they'll be talking about what opportunities are enabling them to achieve their dreams and what barriers they're finding in their way.
And
also on the website.
Go ahead.
We have we're sort of collecting dreams because, of course, 40 stories is great, but we understand there's so many more dreams out there, and we want to encourage people to dream and to encourage other people to join a conversation. So we have this great page that's just at 3dreamproject.org/dreams. You'll see it in the navigation on the page, where we have hundreds of dreams collected of people who have come online, wrote down what their dream is, and we'd invite any of your viewers to do that as well, to input their dreams and kind of join the conversation that way.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about that in a minute, but I wanted to play a little bit of some of the stories that are on the site. And one of the people featured on the site is Adriana Aguilar, and she's an undocumented immigrant. She came to the U.S. at the age of one, and now she's trying to make her way through college. So let's take a little bit of a listen to Adriana's story.
My name is Adriana Aguilar. I am 26 years old. I migrated from Mexico to the United States when I was a year and a half. I am the oldest and only woman of 5 siblings. My parents highlight the fact that if we didn't have resources here in the United States because we are undocumented, we always have to hustle and create opportunities for us. I started realizing I'm undocumented. I don't have access to financial aid. I cannot apply to a job in an office like my other friends because I don't have social security. I cannot receive health benefits. I suffered depression, and that was something that I never talked to my parents about because I never had an example of my parents saying, I can't, I give up. That was not that it was not acceptable, but it was not mentioned on the table. So it was really hard for me to express that. So I had to deal with my own depression by my own. For many, higher education means social mobility. It's earning another tool to have access. Like, how can I use that in my favor in order to be resilient to the situation? You know, higher education means that my parents came to the United States for a reason, and that reason is happening, you know.
That was Adriana Aguilar. She's one of 40 voices featured in videos created by the ReDream Project team. We're speaking with their producers right now, Nathaniel Bozart and Carla McCabe. They've joined us with 21st, by the way, if you're just joining us, is one of the partners with ReDream. It's a nationwide series. It's being led by KCPT. Nathaniel, how did you find Adriana and the other voices that were featured in the videos?
We found them through kind of our networks. The hard part was having to kind of narrow it down. What we did originally was we decided, you know, with this series, we want to show as much diversity of what America means, who's living here as possible. So we actually made a spreadsheet, and we kind of wrote down how are people different. So people are different maybe by race or nationality, by their religion or their gender or their sexuality or all these different things, socioeconomic status. We created that list, and then we tried to just sort of start filling categories, which was kind of an incredibly cold way to go about a task.
But it's such an interesting thing, though, right? Because as you're saying all those different categories, Nathaniel, do you feel like all of those different categories of people that make up America all have different, did you find that they had very different ways that they approached the question of what their American dream was?
I'd say a little bit. I think certainly what we found is that there's so much similarity too, is that, and that's definitely what we hope to find to kind of let this project show how, yeah, like we have so many things that could divide us, so many things that do make us different, but really like, across the board, everyone has kind of at the bottom of their dream is, you know, they want to be fed with a home, they want to have a family, they want to be happy, and everybody shares that in common, which is kind of the great unifying thing of dreams, right? That we all have dreams like this that unify us.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a listen to another story. I'm thinking about Kyle Smitley, the founder of a school in Detroit. What's interesting about Kyle is that Kyle's dream is to actually help kids be able to achieve their dreams. So let's take a listen to this woman who's trying to bridge the opportunity gap for kids in Detroit.
To me, when I hear people talk about the American dream, what it means to me is this idea that people can come from anywhere, any class, any country, any city, and
if you're willing to work hard enough, you can have it all. For me, the American dream looks like working hard to get to a place that you decide you want to get to that will ultimately fulfill you in a way that you're satisfied with. My role is the founder and executive director of Detroit Achievement Academy. Detroit Achievement Academy is a free public school located on the northwest side of Detroit. The opportunity gap for kids in Detroit is tremendous. I'm seeing firsthand how the cycle of poverty and groups of people being entirely marginalized can affect everyone's opportunity. So part of my passion, my work, is not only to close the opportunity gap for kids, but knowing that, like, I need to close it for their parents. Like, their parents, like, want nothing more than to get a really awesome job and provide for their families, but they just literally have every card in the deck stacked against them in a way that no one, regardless of education level or work ethic, could overcome. And that, I think, is what drives me to close the opportunity gap. My pursuit of happiness is intertwined with my students in so much that I want nothing more than for them to believe that they can do whatever they want. And I would hope that they would see what it looks like to be an adult that is working really hard to do good work for other people. And I just hope that I can be one of many, hopefully, models of that in their life as well.
That was Kyle Smitley, founder of a school in Detroit. And Nathaniel, Carla, what was so interesting to me about her dream was that it's actually to help kids be able to achieve their dream. And as you all have been working on capturing people's dreams, how often is it that you find someone whose dream is centered around making a difference in other people's lives?
Yeah, I'll jump in here. I think it has been really surprising to us, and I'll give an example of an event that we had a couple of weeks ago here in Kansas City. It was a youth ambassadors event, and the youth ambassadors is an organization who works with kids between the age of 14 and 18 that come from, you know, the urban core. They are extremely inspiring. They're taught social skills, basic social skills, how to prep for job interviews, presentation skills, and they stood up in a room and basically read each other's stories, which were very, very raw, hard-hitting, sensitive subject matters. So at the end of that event, we stood up and asked them to, you know, what their American dream was and to share that with us. And it still gives me goosebumps every time I think of it, because every one of those kids, all they could talk about was giving back. Everything was about their community or their family. It was, for example, one young child said that she just wants to go to college so that she can look after her mum afterwards the way she's looked after her. And it was just very, very inspiring to hear kids who don't really have very much and have never had very much, as well as the experiences that they've had in their lives. Most people will not see in their lifetime, but yet everything they kept talking about was given back either in their community or family, as I say. So that has been a big message. I would say a lot of the people that we've talked to with community events, they are very much, you know, they're not talking about themselves wanting the fancy car, or yes, people do aspire to have a home and their health and a family, but yet they still seem to really buy into this community, this sense of community again.
Nathaniel, we just have about a minute or two left, but I wanted to ask you, what's been the most surprising thing to you as you're the one who kind of came up with this idea, and as you've gone through 40 of these stories, you're hearing these stories as you're going out and doing events across the country, what's been the most surprising thing you've learned from this whole experience?
Wow. That's tough. I think I'm maybe surprised by people's optimism. I definitely kind of fall into a camp that I certainly think there's a lot of things that need fixing in our country, just to be honest about my kind of personally where I stand. And so we've heard these amazing stories from people, and they tell you about the barriers they've faced. And you, me as the one doing the interviewing in many circumstances, I'm thinking, wow, like this is just nuts. Like the cards been stacked against them the whole way. And then we get to the end of the interview, and the question that we always ask is, hey, so do you think your version of the American dream is available to all Americans? And it's a really weighty question. And many times I anticipate an answer that's going to be sort of pessimistic or just kind of a glasses half empty, look at life. But there's so many times that people say, you know what, like, people can make it. People can make it if they work harder. People can make it with just a little bit of luck. And I think that optimism has surprised me. And I think
that's a great message. Yeah, thanks for that, Nathaniel.
Yeah.
That's Nathaniel Bozart, associate producer for ReDream. Carla McCabe is the executive producer for ReDream. You heard them talk about events. We're going to be doing some of them as well. So stay tuned to our show. Follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, at 21st Show, to find out about the events we'll be doing with ReDream. Again, the website is redreamproject.org. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
On Friday, Hillary Clinton's candidacy has lots of people talking about women in politics. We'll be talking about women with women politicians in Illinois about their experience. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This is The 21st. Thanks for listening.